Hey everyone, and welcome back to your daily Linux and open source news podcast. So first, let's talk about Ubuntu. Ubuntu 24.04 LTS was released yesterday alongside all of its official variants. It's an LTS version, so it will get up to 12 years of support, depending on whether you enable Ubuntu Pro and you get the extra 2 years on top of that. And Ubuntu 24.04 will be the base for the next Linux Mint, for Elementary OS, for Zorin OS, for KDE Neon, and a lot of other distributions. Now, in terms of what it brings in itself, it's not a big update compared to 23.10. You get GNOME 46, but Ubuntu didn't bring any specific tweaks to it, so you only get the better notifications, an improved file manager, experimental variable refresh rate support, some updated settings, and better online accounts, and also improved fractional scaling, notably on how fonts are rendered. You also get the kernel 6.8, so technically you should see improved battery life on laptops thanks to the new P-State drivers, and also thanks to improved performance profiles. And there are a few other changes under the hood, notably with the installer now letting you do automatic installs with a YAML file, and having been redesigned a bit to look more cohesive, and frankly, it also looks a lot nicer. And if you're coming from Ubuntu 23.10, you are not going to have a drastically improved experience, but users that only go from one LTS to the other, so coming from 22.04, they will definitely have a lot to enjoy here. As per the other flavors, there's nothing really important to mention because Kubuntu sticks to Plasma 5.27, so no Plasma 6 here, same for Ubuntu Studio, so you will only get Plasma 6, or I guess 6.1, in Ubuntu 24.10, meaning you have a long wait ahead of you if you're a KDE user and you like Ubuntu. Same for Ubuntu Studio, not moving to Plasma 6. Ubuntu Budgie has a small desktop update with a lot of improved applets. Ubuntu Cinnamon gets Cinnamon 6 and an experimental Wayland session. Lubuntu gained a GUI for Bluetooth and to configure the login screen. And Xubuntu has a few app updates, notably recursive file search in the file manager. But apart from that, nothing much has changed, apart of course from the underlying base of the distro that all the flavors benefit from. To be honest, it is a boring release, but it is an LTS, so it's pretty good that it's boring. It's not the place to make big sweeping changes. Now with 24.10 and 25.04 shipping with GNOME 47 and 48, we should see much bigger updates, especially for Kubuntu users who will definitely get Plasma 6 and maybe even Plasma 6.1. That's going to be a big change for them. So if you want to learn everything there is to know about this new version of Ubuntu, I made a dedicated video on the YouTube channel. The link is in the notes of this specific daily news show. Now, our second topic is about NVIDIA, and it looks like NVIDIA's investment in our open source driver stack is continuing. After the former Nuvo maintainer, Ben Skaggs, now an NVIDIA employee, contributed a big set of patches to Nuvo, there's another NVIDIA developer who's opened a merge request for the NVK Vulkan drivers, which are also open source, but this time part of Mesa instead of the Linux kernel. The developer in question is called Arthur Huillet, and he used to contribute to Nuvo as well before working for NVIDIA. And his contribution boils down to adding support for a Vulkan extension. But what's interesting here is that NVIDIA seems to be willing to work on open source drivers now, and not just on their own proprietary drivers. Now, there is no official announcement on how much of these contributions we can expect, if it's only individuals working at NVIDIA electing to help, or if it's a company policy, but it's still direct contribution from NVIDIA developers and submitted from their NVIDIA addresses, so it's not hard to think that it is a company-sponsored, at least. Now, hopefully, NVIDIA can follow in the footsteps of AMD. They could become as much of a good open-source citizen as the Red Team can be. And honestly, I think it's great news. If NVIDIA starts making Nuvo and NVK better, we might end up in a situation where 99% of people using NVIDIA GPUs use Mesa and the Linux kernel, just like AMD users are using now, and the 1% who need compute-specific drivers or CUDA we'll use the proprietary drivers instead. That's the dream. Now, whether this has an impact on the official open source NVIDIA modules, I'm not sure. Maybe they realized that they would never manage to get those open source modules inside the Linux kernel, and so they would never really be that great for people. And so they elected to contribute to Novo and NVK instead. Maybe they want to focus on both open source efforts. I'm not sure, but it's still great news to see NVIDIA developers contributing directly in the name of the company to our open source drivers. Now, to conclude this episode, we're going to talk about AI and Apple in the same sentence. If you've watched or listened to any of my content, you know I'm not a big fan of Apple, despite still using an iPhone as a daily driver because I could not find any Android device that fitted my admittedly very specific and weird needs. But at least on the AI front, it looks like I'm going to have to praise them or at least not criticize them as much as I do on other topics, because they're apparently the only ones doing generative AI ethically. They've been striking deals with major news publications and major publishers to be able to use their works to train their large language model, something no other company has done, apart maybe from Adobe, who is apparently also pretty respectful of copyright, which, like, of course they kind of have to, because that's their main goal. They only work with artists as a product. So most AI developers just don't care about that. They just pilfered what they wanted off of the internet without any regard for the licenses, the copyright, attribution, including the code that they took, the books, the videos, the images, and whatever else might have a license attached to it. Apple is apparently a bit more picky about what is used to train their AI tools, and they're apparently in talks with Condé Nast, with IAC, and NBC News. The goal is obviously to avoid future copyright-related issues. If they thought they could get away with just grabbing anything and everything from the internet, they would do it. But they probably think, first, it will look bad, because it does, a lot of people don't like that. And second, if at some point there's a ruling, you might even have to delete your entire model because it's been trained on unethical data. Or you might have to pay some back way royalties that you owe ever since you started using this data. So they probably just don't want that to happen. And they probably just want to be protected in case any part of the world decides that training AI on this sort of data requires following copyright, which is probably going to happen in some part of the world or another. Now, apparently, Apple's AI will also run on-device, locally, and won't require an internet connection for most queries you can do with this tool, which should also, technically, make it more private than other alternatives, or at least it could. Doesn't mean it is private just because it runs on-device, but at least it won't send everything you do onto a server. It might still be stored on the Apple device and then be sent afterwards. Now, there's a caveat, though, because apparently people who are testing the AI at Apple, so Apple developers working on that tool, they have no restrictions on what they can use to test things out. And so they are very likely using copyrighted material in their own testing as well. Now, whether these materials will end up being part of the stable released models dataset, we don't know, but apparently they are using this kind of stuff. And props to Apple for doing it right, or at least trying to do it right. AI tools can be fantastic, but personally, I am not willing to accept the argument that since they need tons of data, we should disregard any license or copyright attached to this data. If you cannot build these tools in a way that respects the licenses most online content has, then you cannot build these tools at all and you shouldn't even try. Pilfering the works of people just because they are available publicly is not okay. Public doesn't mean free to use for any use case. Okay, so this will conclude this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As always, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for your support. And I guess you will hear me in the next one on Monday. Bye!